Hi, it's Chris with 49 Media, and today I'm speaking with Stephen Strait. Hi, Stephen.
Hello.
You've got a lot of blogs out there, and they're all very interesting. I love reading them. What's the focus of your blogs?
Well, each blog has a different focus, although two of them I'm starting to differentiate more because they're starting to seem somewhat similar. And that would be my first blog was Vespers the Great. And great is G-R-A-T-E, meaning grinding to powder with a harsh sound. And I came up with that because I was into direct marketing, and then I got into web usability analysis. And as I pursued web usability analysis and started writing about it and thinking about it, I came across some people, some designers who were hostile to usability ideas, and I found it difficult to get past that. Sometimes people were stubbornly opposed to, for example, Jacob Nielsen, who's one of the web usability experts out there that people refer to a lot. So I, just as sort of a joke, called myself Vespers the Great, meaning that some of my web usability ideas were grating or irritating to some designers who wanted to just design anything, which I started to call narcissistic design, that I don't need to follow rules, I can do anything I want, and if users find it difficult to navigate and operate my site, that's tough, they're just going to have to learn new skills. So Vespers the Great was my first, it was a web usability blog, and then I came up with Art Test Explosion. I started learning how to do digital art, and I started posting artwork on that Art Test Explosion blog. Then I think the next one might have been Cosmos Blogmos, which is my science fiction micro stories, very, very short science fiction stories. And the next one was Straight Site Systems, which was supposed to be my corporate type blog of my company, Straight Site Systems, and so therefore in that blog it was general marketing type posts about marketing in general. It could be posts about television commercials or direct marketing, advertising, that type of thing, which I have now closed as a landmark site, much as Clue Train Manifesto site is now a landmark site. I don't add anything to it, but I'm leaving it up there because there's a lot of good information. And then the next one, and the last one I'll talk about, is Blog Core Values. And I developed that blog site. The focus of that is pretty much zeroing in on the ethics, even the morality of certain blogging practices and attitudes and so forth. And Blog Core Values, I'm trying to keep it somewhat different from Vespers the Great. Vespers the Great, as I said, started out as a web usability type blog, and it's now much more heavily oriented to blogology, or the science and art of blogging. Blog Core Values, I want that to emphasize more the ethics and sort of guidelines for bloggers, especially new bloggers. Whereas Vespers the Great, I'm trying to keep that more oriented to more technical aspects of blogging.
Okay, well, you've just used a whole lot of words that are pretty new in the world, and there are a lot of other words floating around on the internet. And so what's your definition of blog, and what do you think about all those different words that are floating around out there?
Well, I've invented about 30 or 40 different words myself, which a lot of people refer to as neologisms. And I think that as technology evolves and as humanity evolves along with it, we need new words. We need new words. We need new ideas. We need new people. And I think that it's fun to use new words. You'll notice children love to learn new words, and they a lot of times make them up. And there's a lot of teen chat room type abbreviations and new words that they use, and sometimes they develop these things to disguise what they're saying from the prying ears and eyes of adults. So, but getting back to what is a blog, I'm glad you asked me that because there are a lot of definitions out there, and I think the worst definition and the most common is an online diary or journal. I think that's a gross distortion of what a blog is.
Uh-huh.
A blog is basically to be, and of course I've looked into this quite a bit, so if someone does think of a blog or call a blog an online diary, I'm not going to flame them or get angry or think they're stupid or anything, but a blog actually, one of the simplest definitions is it's simply a minimalistic or reduced or very simplistic website that has frequently added material, which are called posts, and they are displayed in reverse chronological order. That's the most simple and basic definition of a blog.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like any other website, except that it has frequently added material that's the most recently added is appearing at the top of the main index page. And I could go on, and I have a very elaborate, like a 6 or 8 paragraph definition of a blog, which is, I guess, more than a definition, but more of a description. But that's basically all a blog is. It's a very reduced, minimalistic website. And the reason I say minimalistic is that it doesn't necessarily have all the whistles and bells a traditional website has. However, its advantage and the reason why a blog is infinitely superior to a conventional website, and I really want to stress that, a blog is a quantum leap beyond the conventional website because its main strength is the easy publishing aspect of it. For the blog author, what's called a blogger, they can easily and quickly, it's like writing an email. Doc Searles once defined a blog as an email to the world, and I think that's one of the greatest definitions of a blog. It's as easy, if someone's never seen a blog or never posted to a blog of their own, it's pretty much just like writing an email and publishing it and sending off an email to someone, except you're sending an email to your own little website called a blog.
Sure, and would a blog be sort of a substitute for a website? I mean, would that be valid for everybody and every company, for example, or is that would that be focused on a certain type of person or company?
Well, let me be kind of contrarian here. I'm starting to swing very far away from trying to coax CEOs and business people and organizations to have a blog. I think that's sort of the trendy thing right now in the blogosphere, which is the realm of blogs or that section of the web that contains blogs. But I'm starting to think that businesses and CEOs, unless they seriously want to have a conversation with customers, suppliers, public, they should stay away from blogs because blogs are... One thing I forgot to mention about why a blog is infinitely superior to a conventional website is not only the ease of adding material to it, and you don't need a content management system or a webmaster to do it. You can do it yourself. But the other thing that's very paramount in differentiating a blog from a website is that a blog is interactive. It allows people to not just passively absorb the information like listening to a preacher give a sermon from a pulpit. Instead, you can, what they say, listen or read what a blog author has to say, and then if you agree, disagree, or have more information to add to that statement, that post, you can click on a function to add a comment. And you can also, like with conventional websites, you can send email to the author. But in a conventional website, you can email the author, but whatever you email to the author or the webmaster, it's generally not going to appear anywhere on that website. Whereas in a blog, if you post a comment, which is like, again, like writing an email to somebody, or if you email something to the author, often your material, well, almost always, with the comment especially, your material will end up as part of the content of the blog. And that's what we call the democratization, turning into a democratic realm of the blog. In other words, a blog is like the universal access to web content publishing. That's a good way to describe a blog, where everybody can either have a blog or contribute material to a blog quickly and easily.
Mm-hmm. And on your blog, Vaspers is the Great, you just asked other people about what their definition of blogs are. What are they saying?
There's a lot of definitions of blogs, and I think they all the definitions that I've cited add a little something. There's a fellow named Tom Coates at a blog called Plastic Bag, and he has a definition that talks about a super distributed conversation and uses some real technical online community type language. I think that's fascinating and one of the most unique definitions. And then you have everything from the Eaton Web definition and Rebecca Blood's definition to Viz Stone. And there's a new book. Elizabeth Castro has a really interesting definition. So her book, I think, is How to Create a Blog with Blogger, something, a title similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very good definition, too. So there's a lot of good definitions out there. I think if you did a search engine search just on the word, on the phrase blog definition, you can come up with some fascinating things.
Well, it was fascinating to read all the responses that you got in your blog. And another fascinating thing in your blog is that you were just in Business Week. They talked about you, about your blog taglines experiment, and I read about that, and that was very interesting to read. And I was interested in what that's about.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. I've been blogging for about a year. I started with Vaspers the Great and added a few more, but I didn't get a lot of results for a good solid 12 months. I got a few mentions here and there and some links here and there. I wasn't blog rolled that often, and I started getting kind of in despair about it. I started thinking, boy, I put in anywhere literally 15 hours a day, sometimes 20 hours a day on my blogs, or blog-related research and so forth on the web. And I thought, where are the results? I'm doing so much work, and I'm really not generating a lot of attention here or even income or anything. And I'm getting clients who have read my blog and think, well, I'd like you to hire you to do a certain project. So I wasn't getting a lot of results. I got some, but not as much as I really thought were worthy of the effort I was putting into it. And then I had a book publisher, a computer book publisher, asked me to write a book. They approached me and asked me to write a book on business blogs. And at the time, this is several months ago, I was pretty burnt out on blogs, wasn't reading them much, and wasn't doing a lot with my blogs. And so he challenged me and said, what is the thing that makes a blog tick?
Mm-hmm.
There's so many blogs out there. What is it that makes one successful? So I emailed about 200 top bloggers from the Technorati, Daypop, and other indexes of link popularity, successful, high-traffic blogs. Most blogs, like I've said, have a display of the blog author's email. And so I emailed them and asked them, what do you think makes a blog successful? And I got all these results, and I didn't pursue the book. That kind of went in different directions, and I still have all these great answers from all these top bloggers. I did not all 200 answered it, but I've got about 70 or better answers as to what they think makes a blog successful, how they measure it, and what they think of as success. But anyway, so that was something that got me really heavily and deeply into the blogosphere, and this is to answer your question. I hope haven't gotten too far off topic, but that was research, and I never thought of how I could do my own unique research more than just taking a topic and seeing what kind of information I can get off of the web, but to actually actively ask top bloggers their opinions of things. And that's pretty much how the blog taglines experiment, and prior to that, what I call the blog post title experiment. I started thinking, why don't I analyze certain aspects of top blogs and even some obscure blogs that I think are noteworthy, and let's look at them from a certain angle, and then let's just do what I call an experiment. I guess it's more of an examination. But I took, the first thing I did was I took the blog post titles. And the way a blog post is titled is very, very important for search engine optimization and for grabbing the attention of a reader. And I think most website operators and even blog operators or bloggers fail to really understand how readers are in a huge hurry. There's millions of blogs they can go to, so you've got to grab their attention with something, with media in your blog and with an interesting title of your blog and interesting post titles and interesting taglines and so forth. So this is what has really grabbed the attention of the blogosphere and Business Week's Blog Spotting blog and other people, Doc Searles and John C. Dvorak and many, many, I don't mean to name drop, but many people are very interested and are starting to really pay attention to my blog because I'm doing real blogology, serious blogology. I'm taking, it could be up right around 60 different blogs and looking at what are the last 5 post titles they have posted. And I compile them and I give live links to each blog, and then the last 5 posts titles. Now, the one that Blog Spotting, the Business Week blog, was interested in was my blog taglines experiment, where I did the same thing. I copy and pasted the other post, and then I took out the post titles, and I plugged in, to make it go faster for me, I plugged in the taglines, which a tagline is the descriptive text right under the title. Usually it's right under the title of the blog, and it's sort of an orientation to, like, hey, this is what this blog's all about. Most of the time it's serious and technically descriptive. Sometimes it's a funny statement. One of my favorite, three of my favorites, I'll say just quickly, is Blog Sisters. Their blog tagline or descriptive text under the title is "Where men can link, but they can't touch." I thought that was funny and really great. Yeah. And another one is the blog of Leonid Mamchenkov, and his blog tagline is "You just stepped in a pile of posts." I thought that was really hilarious.
Great.
And there's many, many great taglines. Some are funny, and others are very precise and accurate and give you a good orientation. And that is one of my main complaints with websites, is that when you get to a website, a lot of times you don't know where you're at. You don't know, what is this website all about? What am I supposed to gain here? Why is this different from other websites? And what is the benefit of this site to me? And what can I do here? What can I do here? What can I learn here? In a blog, there's not so much to do necessarily outside of the wonderful thing of commenting. Posting a comment and adding to the content of the blog, which is a radical idea. But a blog, since there are estimates of being anywhere from 10 million to 30 million blogs in the world, if you want to have a blog and start one up, you've got competition of 10 to 30 million other blogs, so why does anybody want to look at yours? If there are only 15 or 300 blogs in the world, you could have a blog and not spend a lot of time or attention in trying to get people to pay attention to it and explaining who you are and what you're doing and why your blog is somewhere that someone would want to visit.
Yeah, absolutely. And
so many, each blog had better figure out how they're going to attract attention and orient people as to what their blog is all about.
Yeah, well, absolutely, and I love the way you use those images. Those are really beautiful images to sort of where you have the titles in them, and you break up all the text in your blog, and it makes it so much more appealing to the eye, and it makes it much more fun to read as opposed to other blogs where it's just a wall of text, and you just look at it, and oh my gosh, I'm not going to go into that.
That's one of my most. I'm really happy to hear you say that, because not so much that you're complimenting me, but because this is another thing that I'm trying to push. This is another thing I'm trying to promote in the blogosphere as a blogologist, and that is, I guess I get it from both being interested in reading a lot of poetry, especially when I was a teenager, and also recently one of my biggest influences in my life and in my writing and my thinking is Jacques Derrida, the French philosopher who recently passed away. but he's credited as starting a whole new type of philosophy called deconstruction, which all deconstruction is, it's not destructive or negative or cynical, but what deconstruction is very, very, very close reading of text. And Derrida spoke very much of hypertext and linking and so forth back in the 50s and 60s. And he, a lot of people don't know this, but he's the one that formulated a lot of the heavy philosophical type descriptions and formula and so forth for what hyperlinking and have. He used to say that a text has artificial borders, that a text is not just isolated, it's in a network of other texts. And he was not talking about the internet or the web or anything like that. He was just talking in general that any text that's written is not an isolated thing, that the beginning and end of a text is blurred, just like when you eat an apple, at what point does the apple cease to exist and become part of you? And so it's that type of thing, that when you put a text out there, it is sort of digested by the universal text of the universe, of all texts that has ever existed and is yet to come, and there is no real hard division between your text and other texts. And we see that, in, of course, in the internet, that you write something and someone links to it, and what you wrote had links to other writing, and so there's really the boundaries or the borders of a text are really blurring. And that's wonderful, because that gets everyone in the world involved in creating this sort of a universal library of information. I think I've gone pretty far off topic here. I even forget what your original question. Oh, you were asking me about the way I format my text in my blog post.
Right.
But Jacques Derrida, I came across he was talking about how in text, and again, he wasn't talking necessarily about online text, although he did talk about it, but he was saying text in general, in books and magazines, everywhere else, why be limited to the traditional paragraphing and dense blocks of text and all this, that most people still think you have to write that way, even in a blog, and that's ridiculous. And so I do break up my text. Sometimes I'll put a lot of spaces between paragraphs. I try to make my paragraphs extremely short, usually one-sentence paragraphs. And grammarians and English teachers will freak out and say, what? Each paragraph should contain one idea. But usually, if you're writing in a succinct style that's easy to quickly read and assimilate, generally each sentence will be a distinct idea. Maybe two or three sentences, and then you move on to the next idea, because you're not going to write a huge, massive tome. So basically, I do break up my text and have extra spaces between paragraphs, and I try to use listing, bulleted lists and numbered lists whenever I can. And there's a lot that you can do with just the text, much less the other media that you and I both agree should be in blogs.
Right. Well, I've noticed that that I keep on reading your blogs because of all the different stylistic things that you're using there, as opposed to when I'm on other blogs and there's just a wall of text. At some point, I just get tired of reading and I just stop. So I like the bulleted, the succinct, the one sentence per paragraph, and then all the space in between. That's really very nice to read. Okay. You are speaking about in your blogs about the Blago Combat and Blog Wars and Blog Wars of 2005. What's that about?
I believe there are different phases of blogging. I think blogs, a lot of historians, blog historians, talk about the first blog being Tim Berners-Lee's What's New page. And other blogs, some of the earlier blogs that first came out in about 19, I believe, if I remember right, I think the first blogs, it can be called blogs, came out around 1992, and then they really started picking up around 1997. We had Jorn Barger with Robot Wisdom, and we had Dave Weiner with Scripting News, and some of these other blogs. And that was what you might call the first phase of blogs, where they were mostly link logs. There wasn't a lot of commentary. They were mostly pre-surfed web-type information hubs, where they would say, here's something that's great that's going on at Sun Microsystems or Hewlett-Packard or IBM or Microsoft or whatever. And it was a lot of technical stuff, and it was just, here's something that you ought to look at, here's the link to it, just a sentence or two and a lot of links. Not any kind of personal journalism or anything, a little bit of that, but mostly it was just here a link log, a log or a list of links that you might, so you could quickly gain some very good information and not have to spend hours cruising all over the place on the web. And then another phase, and I haven't really worked out phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four, and so forth, but I want to do that at some point. But another loosely defined phase was when the blogger came into the picture, and then everybody could easily, and there's others other software and hosters out there, but Blogger and Blogspot really made an explosion in the blogosphere and in the web with their easy one, what they call push-button publishing that Evan Williams developed with others. But Evan Williams gets a lot of the credit, and he's moved on to Odeo, a podcasting service. But anyway, Evan Williams and Blogger made it available for almost anybody. Well, basically anyone with a web, you know, internet access could have a blog. And that sort of launched, along with LiveJournal and some other services, the phenomenon of the digital diary or online journal. And a lot of teenagers and young people got into that, and they like to express themselves. They're searching for an identity. They want to connect with their peers. It was a great thing. The next phase, after the first the link logs that were technical, and then we had the more personal online diary-type blog, the next thing that came out was an emphasis more on business blogging, CEO blogging, organizational blogging, and marketing blogs, where marketers, of course, picked up on blogs because they want to have conversations with clients and potential clients. So that was another phase of using blogs in a more business and marketing type sense. Then what happened was blogs started being used to debunk, and not only to promote things and to link to things and to connect with peers and friends, but to start debunking and acting as sort of a journalistic gadfly, like a Socrates going around questioning things. And, of course, we saw the fall of Trent Lott and Dan Rather and other things out there. And even I've even seen references that the French and Dutch popular rejection of the European Union Constitution was due largely, not entirely, of course, but to some extent to bloggers.
Wow.
Blogging, saying, hey, hold up, whoa, I don't know about this. And I don't really know enough about the European Union Constitution to say that's a good thing or a bad thing, although I have stated that I think it's a good thing, but I'm no expert on it. I have to clarify that. And I'm rather apolitical. I am not partisan. I don't care a fig about Democrats or Republicans or communists or capitalists or any of that stuff. I'm more interested in personal transformation and social enhancements. But this is the new phase where bloggers started criticizing, analyzing, questioning media, government, politicians, and rogue regimes, and so forth. And they stirred up quite a bit of controversy here and there. It was sort of like little blips on the radar of the mass media. But bloggers were responsible for actually changing the world and bringing down what they thought were corrupt or unprofessional or even unethical people and organizations. And there's been a retaliation, I feel, against that. In fact, I think that because of what happened with Dan Rather and a few other things, there is, and not to pick on Dan Rather, because he's no worse probably than a lot of other people and maybe no worse than myself in some ways, but what the bloggers considered shoddy or unprofessional journalism, and they attacked it. Now I think that there are certain forces who are trying to attack blogs in retaliation. And one of the ways they're doing that is by certain people and certain organizations actually infiltrating the blogosphere, creating bogus, ridiculous, silly, or dubious type blogs. to discredit blogs and to make blogs seem narcissistic, frivolous, dubious, detrimental, whatever. So I started seeing certain types of blogs being created. I didn't, for example, the fictional character blog where someone, where an imaginary creature tries to be a spokesman for a company, and there's a lot of controversy. Some people think that can work and others don't think it can work. But it sort of violates what has been called the universal blog mantra, or what I expanded and called blog core values, the nine values of blogging. But it's a fictional character blog sort of violates the idea of transparency and authenticity, being not hiding anything because you're doing something illegal or dubious. That's transparency. And being your genuine self and not putting on an act or pretending to be something you're not, which is called authenticity. So a fictional character blog, unless it's like Mickey Mouse for Walt Disney or something, that might work and be okay. But for a company just to come up with a fictional character and for that fictional character to say, well, I was in Paris the other day and I discovered a great entree and I want to give you the recipe for it. If this is a fictional character, then it's blurring the distinction of a blog and a blog author being authentic and genuine and having a candid conversation from the heart. So that's one thing. Another thing is sleazy sponsored link blogs, where a blog will seem to be very professional, but on the sidebar and at the bottom text links, there are links to dubious things like online casinos and pharmaceutical products and real estate loans and things like that that are just obviously, without clicking on the links and visiting the destinations, which you probably don't want to do because they could end up attaching spyware to your system.
Right.
But just looking at them, you can pretty much tell that they're probably dubious or even malicious links, and they're not something that should be on a reputable, credible blog. So that's what I call a sleazy, sponsored link blog, where they've sold space on the blog to dubious or outright malicious companies, con artists or whatever. At least it seems to be on the surface. And again, I can't say they are, because I'm not going to click on those links, because I could go there and a virus or spyware or something could be attached to my computer, so I'm not even going to click on them. But if you just see, you'll see that once in a while.
All right, well, that's...
There are many other things going on, and I call that the warfare against the blogosphere, and I call the blog wars of 2005. In my opinion, the year 2005, and maybe beyond, hopefully not, but one of the distinctive qualities of the year 2005 is that there is an infiltration of the blogosphere by dubious or malicious blogs, and I have declared all-out war against them.
Oh, well, that's really fascinating, but I guess on the internet and in life in general, you have to be aware of the bad guys, and there's a lot of great stuff out there, and there's a lot of bad stuff out there, and there's a lot of really bad stuff out there. So, yeah, it's almost like in real life.
Yeah, and I try not to mention anything by name. Usually I won't say this blog is malicious or this blog is unethical. I just try to state the general principles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very rare that I will name a name or anything, because I don't want to, you know, increase traffic to it if it's what I call a bad blog.
Sure.
But I often compare this to, for example, the telephone. When blogs first started, and Seth Godin, I have to give him credit, he got me going on this whole thing. He just happened to say, you know, the more dubious or frivolous blogs that enter the blogosphere, the quality of the blogosphere as a whole, overall, declines. So the more frivolous, trivial, or dubious, or malicious blogs that accumulate into the blogosphere, the overall quality and usefulness of the blogosphere deteriorates. And that's a really radical and confrontational statement that a lot of blogophiles, people that just love any kind of blog for any reason, they don't like hearing that. They want everybody to have a blog. They want every business to have a blog and every individual to have a blog and just blog, blog, blog. And that's kind of ridiculous to me. I think it's nice for blogs to increase and to have more of them and more variety for sure, but not to the extent that the blogosphere as a whole deteriorates in value. And I think of it as the telephone. When the telephone first was invented, I read somewhere that Alexander Graham Bell thought that the main purpose of a telephone was to, for people to use them passively, to not use them to connect with friends and family, but rather the phone would just sit there and every once in a while it would ring and you'd pick it up and you'd hear an announcement that get ready for the symphony orchestra concert of Ioannis Xenakis's new concerto or something. You would hear opera and symphonic music broadcast live on your telephone. And the other thing is it would ring once in a while, you'd pick it up, and it'd give you a news report. That was the original concept of the telephone, according to Alexander Graham Bell. For someone to pick it up and call their buddy across the street, why didn't you just go over there and talk to him? Or to talk to someone in another country or in another state or another city, that wasn't really considered at first. And then, so we went from that to the telephone being used as a communication tool for everybody and people calling each other, you know, whenever they felt they needed to. And then, so when the phone rang, it wasn't going to be just a symphony music concert or a news update. It might be your mother who got sick and is in the hospital, or it might be your lover who calls and wants to just chat with you and talk to you and tell you what has been going on in their life or something. So the telephone was used as a communication tool with average, ordinary people. And then it turned into telemarketing. Then we had the telephone sort of deteriorating or being used as in an annoying way. If you pick up the phone, and now when the phone rings, you may not even pick up the phone. So right. We've gone full circle. Now we're back to the point where the phone rings, and you may have an answering machine, and you screen your calls because you're tired of those darn telemarketers calling. So I think the same thing's happening with blogs. At first, it was just a technical thing that technically oriented people used to communicate and to list information and news updates, and then it became a thing that people used for personal communication among friends and family and so forth, and to get information about stores and whatever, call different organizations and companies and stores and so forth to ask questions to them. And then it sort of devolved into a thing where when the phone rings, you cringe and you think, oh, it might be another one of those telemarketers. So I think the blogs are the same way. They're starting to get to the point where now when there's a new blog, you might cringe thinking, is this just going to be a trivial, frivolous, drivel type blog, or is it going to even be malicious or dubious?
Yeah, that's true. And that's very fascinating view of the whole thing. And that really helps me along a lot in understanding all of that. And another fascinating topic that you have is the interplanetary internet.
Yes, this is a rather obscure thing right now anyway, but something I stumbled on, which most of the good things I discover, it's sort of like accidentally. I may not even be doing a search or anything. And I can't even remember how I stumbled upon this, but I think it was a Google alert in my Gmail inbox, and I really want to pitch for, I think Gmail is a wonderful email system, and I think that Google is pretty cool to have. You can subscribe to various alerts, and every day, just about every day, you can get a little alert in your inbox in your Gmail account, and it'll tell you about an interesting link or news development on a given keyword or key phrase. But moving on from that, I think that's how I discovered. I think I got a Google alert in my Gmail email inbox that for some reason it came into my inbox about the interplanetary internet. At any rate, there is a system being developed by NASA and some other government and corporate entities to develop, and this is really interesting, they're developing an extraterrestrial internet. And what it is it's an internet that's very different from both the commodity internet, which most people use right now, and they just call it the internet. There's no such thing as the internet. There are many internets. And I think people made fun of George Bush saying internets, plural, and that idiot, there's only one internet. Well, that's not true. There are many internets, and I only know a few of them. And I'm not talking about intranets that are within a company, but I'm talking about internet as a nearly universal thing. There's the commodity internet, which most people are aware of and use, and then there's the Internet 2, which is being developed mostly for academic and corporate institutions, although it's coming into the news because the academic applications of Internet 2, which is a much higher, I think it's 20 times faster than the regular commodity Internet that we use now. Internet 2 is much, much higher speeds and more bandwidth and so forth. But the college students are using Internet 2 to transfer movie files and music files, and so the RIAA and Hollywood or whatever the music and the movie industries are quite up in arms about Internet 2 because it's supposed to be for multimedia transfers of multimedia files at super high speeds and accuracy. But of course, some of these college kids are using it to transfer music and movie files, and so now there's lawsuits and all this going on. But that's Internet 2. Now another Internet that exists is the interplanetary Internet, or the interplanet abbreviated form. And that is what NASA and others are developing. And the thing that makes the interplanetary Internet different is that it's based on sporadic connectivity. It's more on a postal mail and email paradigm, whereas the Internet, commodity Internet, and the Internet 2 are based on high-speed, always-on type connectivity. The interplanetary Internet is based on sporadic connectivity because the purpose is to connect earthly, terrestrial Internets with computer networks and systems that are based on, for example, space shuttles and spacecraft, on eventual Moon or Mars colonies, and we already have orbiting satellites around Mars, and there are computer networks based on that and being implemented within that orbital satellite system. And so we need to connect our earthly internet with the interconnected networks on Mars and orbiting Mars and the Moon and space shuttles and so forth, spacecraft and probes and so forth. But the problem is because of the conditions of outer space, there's not a guarantee that you'll have a constant connection. So they have to be based on more of an email. Your email doesn't have to be constantly on and constantly connected. Whenever there's an update, it gets into your computer and then it shuts off, so it's off and on type of thing. Or like postal mail, you don't have to be constantly connected, the sender to the recipient. You just send a letter, and then you don't really care if it gets there tomorrow or maybe 2 days later, and if you do care, there are services that can get it there guaranteed the next day or even a few hours or whatever. But that is the paradigm. The paradigm is because of cosmic radiation and other problems in outer space, there cannot be a guaranteed connectivity, a guaranteed flow, uninterrupted flow of digital information. So they have to accommodate that, and so they call it a sporadic connectivity. And that's just one of the aspects of it. There's many, many things you could discuss about it, but I think it's fascinating, and I'm thinking, wouldn't it be great to have a blog that's hosted from Mars, a blog that is, or astronauts on the space shuttle doing a blog that they update hourly or daily, and you're getting a post not from another person on Earth, but from an extraterrestrial source. I'm not talking about aliens or Martians or things like that, although that could be possible too, I guess, but right now, humans and human machines interconnecting, not just on Earth, but in other spots in the universe.
Well,
that
is
the interplanetary internet, and I've just added their logo and a link caption to the logo on both Fast Bruce the Great and Blog Core Values. And I wanted to say also about Blog O Combat and what I call the Blog Wars of 2005. That's pretty much why I started a separate blog called Blog Core Values to address a lot of these issues. And but getting back to the interplanetary internet, if you want some interesting cocktail or conversation with your friends, just drop that say, yeah, I'm not interested in the commodity internet or even Internet 2 so much. I'm more interested in the interplanetary extraterrestrial internet. That'll get some conversation going.
Well, I must say, I'm really thankful that you turned me on to that, because I know I'm going to be reading up on that and Googling it and talking to people about it. I think that's very fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, Stephen, thank you very much for your time. That was Stephen Strait, and well, you have a whole lot of blogs, so we should maybe just mention VaspersTheGreat.com, but there will be links to all of your blogs up at the 49 Media website. And thank you very much.
Thank you. I want to clarify, that is VaspersTheGreat.blogspot.com.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Sometimes I forget to put the blogspot in there when I'm writing about it. Once in a while I've done that. But I appreciate that, and I think 49 Media is great, and I just discovered it just a couple weeks ago, I think, and I'm really enjoying what you're doing and the blogs that are appearing there, and I feel very honored to be a part of the directory service that you have there. And again, I agree with you completely. I don't know how many of us are out there, but I agree that blogs really need to get some more whistles and bells, not as distractions or clutter, but as added value to the readers. And I think what you're doing is a part of that, for blogs to become more valuable by enhancing them with audio, video, and other media. So keep up the good work.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
And hey, turn off your radio and turn off your TV. Because now it's What's on the Web Tonight, Honey, at 49media.com.